The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop.
Baseball's back. Baseball's back. Baseball's back.
That's right, motherfuckers. Baseball is officially back. The Players Association and the owners came to an agreement yesterday. We got baseball again. We got the opening day is set for April 7th. So happy birthday to me because my birthday's on April 6th. So that's a great birthday present. I get some baseball coming right out the gate. I mean, my Giants ended last season. They had a great season last year, and I expected a lot more once they hit the postseason, but they kind of failed once they get the postseason. So it's going to be nice to see if they can hopefully build off of that, but great to have some baseball back. A couple of the changes. I mean, of course, you know, lockouts are always over money, and that's basically what it's mostly over, but there are going to be some rule changes, and I'm actually in favor of all of these rule changes that happened. So first, of course, is they already announced this a couple weeks ago, but the universal DH. So now in the National League, there is no more wasted spot in the batting order with the pitcher. So now it's DH all around the league, which I really like. On occasions, it's okay to have a pitcher come in and have a good hit and make a big play at a random time. I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so seeing Madison Bumgarner do that over the years, he would come in and on occasions hit a home run. But, I mean, most of the time, the pitching spot in the batting order is a waste of time. And so it's nice that we're no longer going to have to see the pitcher come in. And we got a DH position in the NL now. And so I really like that rule change. They're actually going back to the way doubleheaders used to be. Last year, they did that stupid experiment where if you did a doubleheader, the second game would only be, or both games would only be six innings, which I just absolutely hated. So both games will be nine innings, and they'll be played as normal. There won't be a runner on second base, which was another thing I hated as well. So back to normal with that. And then now there's going to be 12 teams who make the postseason. I haven't read a breakdown of that. I don't know if they've released a breakdown of how that's going to work, but I'm happy with that as well. I don't see a problem with allowing more teams into the playoffs, and so that should be interesting. And the first week that they ended up canceling, those games will be made up either in doubleheaders later on in the season or just on days that were supposed to be their off days. So we're not going to miss any games this season. We're going to have a full season, and baseball is back, and I'm super excited to get started on thinking of what's going to happen with next season. I'm in a bunch of fantasy baseball leagues, so we're all happy that we could finally start thinking about our drafts coming up here. And I'm just happy to have some baseball back. And it's going to be real interesting to see how many of those crybaby little boycotters last week, we're not going to watch baseball anymore. Yeah, I bet we're going to see you parked right in front of your TV watching your favorite team or whoever the weekend of April 7th. I'm sure you're going to be watching just like you were going to. So that phony little boycott, that wasn't happening. And we also had a lot of NFL news break this week. I mean, the official season doesn't start until the 16th, but boy howdy, the floodgates opened this week, and we got a lot of shit to talk about, and I'm excited about it. So first, let's start with the big news. Aaron Rodgers is going to stay with the Packers. They haven't released the terms of the deal yet, but it's rumored that he's got a four-year, $200 million extension coming his way. With like something like $153 million guaranteed. So go Aaron Rodgers, very well deserved. And now this season, the Packers can just head into the regular season without any drama, no bullshit. And so we'll see what happens with the Packers there, because they're definitely one of the front runners in the NFC this year, because some other big news happened. this week, and the Seattle Seahawks are going to trade Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos. So that's what I mean about the NFC. They're moving one of the good quarterbacks out of the NFC over to the AFC. And yeah, it's so that's a good pickup by Denver. I mean, hands down. They gave up 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, and they're trading Drew Locke, Noah Fant, and Harris, defensive tackle, up to Seattle. But Denver's getting the great end of the deal here. I mean, Denver's been looking for a quarterback ever since Peyton Manning retired, and this gives them a great quarterback for at least, I would say, the next 5, possibly 10 years. Russell Wilson really takes care of himself, so I wouldn't put it past him to be one of those quarterbacks who ends up playing through his 40s, like Tom Brady. So Denver's definitely getting one of the best quarterbacks in the league, getting a solid leader, getting, in my personal opinion, one of the most beautiful passes in NFL history is Russell Wilson's pass. So they're getting that there, and they already have some pretty solid receiving core. They got a pretty decent offensive line. Who knows what's going to happen at the running back position right now? And their defense is pretty good too. So Russell Wilson, he definitely upgraded. And it's just looking more and more like Seattle is going to be in a rebuilding mode this year, because then right after that, they ended up releasing their star linebacker, Bobby Wagner. And if you don't know, he is one of the best linebackers in the league. And the reason why you don't really hear his name is just because he's just a hard worker. And, you know, he's just been up in Seattle. He's not really a me type of dude. But he's been leading the league in tackles for, God, at least like the last 3 to 5 years. That dude is always up in the top 10 in tackles, and he's just a solid player. And so I don't know what's going to happen with Seattle. I kind of expect them to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. But Bobby Wagner is going to be out on the free agent market, and whoever signs him is getting a great linebacker. Then another trade that happened is Carson Wentz getting traded from the Indianapolis Colts to the Washington Commanders. I don't think this really makes them a much better team, but I really don't understand what the Colts are going to do, because they don't have anybody behind Carson Wentz that they were going to bring up, and they don't have a first-round pick. So if they do get a quarterback in the draft, it's going to be maybe in the second or third round. And so I'm just kind of wondering what they're going to do. There's word they might go after Jimmy Garoppolo, which I don't know if that's much more of an improvement of Carson Wentz. I guess it kind of is, just because he does win in the postseason. But it just really kind of sucks for the Colts, because overall, the Colts are a very good team. I mean, they've got a great backfield, solid offensive line. They do need help at the wide receiver position, but the defense is one of the best in the league. So, I mean, really, they're just a couple pieces away. And I'm not saying Carson Wentz was the greatest quarterback of all time. No, he's very middle of the road quarterback. like I said, I don't expect him to have much of an impact in Washington. Maybe not even more than Heinicke. I think it's actually kind of weird that they're moving on from Heinicke so quick. But I mean, I guess maybe he didn't show that much more promise than we initially thought. But I don't know how much better Carson Wentz makes the Commanders. But it definitely, I don't know what the Colts are going to do. And I think that's just a really random move for them. And we'll see what they do. And then also, Washington is going to release their top safety, Landon Collins. And I find that very shocking. I guess it's more of a money move than anything. But he's one of the best safeties in the league. So, if the Cowboys are looking to sign a dude like him, you come to Dallas, homie. I welcome you to Dallas, because whoever gets him, he's right up there with Bobby Wagner, one of the top defenders in the league. So we'll see what happens there with Washington. And then another trade happened yesterday. Khalil Mack traded from the Chicago Bears to the Chargers. And that's a big move by the Chargers, because they already got Joey Bosa on one side. Now they got Khalil Mack on the other side. And honestly, that was one of the places they needed the most improvement on the defensive side of the ball. So the Chargers just made a huge move. They really had to, because now Denver's improved. Who knows what we're going to get from the Raiders this year. And then you always got the Chiefs in that division. So the AFC West right now is a stacked division, at least looking at it right now. But Khalil Mack, great addition to their team. And then they also signed Mike Williams to a $60 million deal. He's been with the team for a couple seasons. He's been a standout receiver. He's one of the most solid receivers in the league. So I think that's also a great move by the Chargers. So a bunch of moves right there. Some franchise tags were handed out as well. The Browns franchise, David Njoku. Bengals franchise, Jesse Bates. KC, Orlando Brown. Miami, Mike Gesicki. Dallas Cowboys, Dalton Schultz. Tampa Bay, Chris Godwin. Green Bay, obviously Devontae Adams. And then the Jaguars tagged Cam Robinson. And those were just the highlighted ones, I think, that mattered the most, especially Devontae Adams. I kind of have a feeling at some point he's going to be signing an extension with the Packers, because I don't think Aaron Rodgers would stay with the Packers unless he was involved, because that's been his dude for a while. And then rounding out the NFL talk, I'm ending with this story. I found it kind of amusing because I have no sympathy or empathy for the subject of this story, and I'll explain further. But basically on Monday, a wide receiver, Calvin Ridley, for the Atlanta Falcons, he's suspended at least for the 2022 season because he gambled on the NFL. And not only did he gamble on NFL games this year, or a game, I don't know, games this year, he also gambled on the Falcons, the team he plays for. Now, here's rule number one of being involved with sports, whether you're a player, an owner, just a random person who just works for the team. You can't gamble. At least you can't gamble on your sport. And in the NFL, you can't gamble on the NFL, but you can gamble on March Madness. You could gamble on NBA games. You could gamble on horse racing. So the only thing you can't gamble on in the NFL is the NFL, which makes complete sense for many fucking reasons. But it, more so now more than ever. And that's because I don't know if you guys noticed this, but gambling is starting to become legal all across the United States. There are many states who continue to make gambling more and more legal. And if you don't notice, there's this trend of sports are becoming more and more popular, including the NFL. And so, and not only is it becoming popular, but now sports leagues, sports teams are actually partnering with gambling. So this is a big fucking deal. And the reason it's just a big deal. It's nothing but money for everybody involved. So you just can't gamble. And it's just stupid that he even gambled. And I know he's not the first player to gamble on his as an athlete, and he's not going to be the last one. I totally get that. But the reason why it's so stupid is because you go through multiple classes that tell you you can't gamble. But also, I actually, just this past summer, took a tour of the Denver Broncos stadium. And when you walk into both locker rooms, do you know what the first and last sign you see walking in and out of the locker room? It's a big sign that says no gambling. And it actually gives you like a rule breakdown of what you can and can't do when it comes to gambling. And it's very simple and it's very easy. So Calvin Ridley has no excuse, in my opinion. And he sent out some stupid tweet where he's like, oh, it was only $1,500. And it's like, okay, dude. And a lot of people are upset at how long the suspension is potentially for. It's at least for a year, but they said it's indefinitely. It's literally like rule number one as an athlete. So there's no excuse in my book for this. And I think he absolutely deserves a year suspension. And it was actually quite funny how easy it was for the NFL to find out about him doing this, because the place he placed the bet on, they were able to track it through his phone and say and verify with the NFL that, yes, that was your NFL player who did this. So it was very easy. And so that kind of tells you that it's actually not that easy to gamble. And quite frankly, you shouldn't be gambling if you're a player. It's a very well-known rule. I mean, hello, Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame for it. While I disagree with him not being in the Hall of Fame, he should absolutely serve consequences, because I'm sorry, those are the consequences of being involved with sports. You don't get to gamble. I'm sorry, the horrors of not being able to gamble, or at least in your sport. I mean, he could gamble on March Madness if he fucking wanted to. But so I found that story completely ridiculous, because a lot of people were thinking Calvin Ridley's some type of victim in this. And I'm like, no, dude, rule number one as an athlete, you can't gamble. I'm sorry. That sucks. You're going to miss a year. But that's just, it is what it is. And you, I have no sympathy or empathy for the dude. And you get what you deserve there. So have fun sitting at home, Calvin Ridley. I mean, he plays for the Falcons anyway. So, I mean, I guess sitting at home is probably a better, it's probably better than what the Falcons are going to be putting onto the field this year. And that actually just makes them even worse because Ridley's actually a good receiver. That was that story. And I just found it amusing because that's just rule number one as a player. Don't gamble. Really not that difficult. All right. And then in the NBA this week, just a couple of things. The Phoenix Suns, first team in the league this year to clinch a playoff spot. They came back strong the other night, had a great game. So they seem to be getting back into the groove of things. Last night, the Nets actually stomped the crap out of the Philadelphia 76ers last night. The big story, of course, was, oh, Ben Simmons got booed as he walked out. And I just, when I hear that kind of shit, I'm like, I'm sorry, you're an athlete. You signed up to get at least booed at. I don't condone, as a matter of fact, I can't stand the fans who like threaten them or their family members or that kind of shit or throw stuff at them. But getting booed at, I'm sorry, but that was going to happen, especially in Philadelphia. But hey, man, your team, by the way, Ben Simmons was not playing in the game, of course, but the Nets just absolutely obliterated the 76ers last night. It wasn't even a close game at all. And so that was interesting. And also in interesting news, I don't know if you guys heard this yet, but the Los Angeles Lakers still fucking suck. You know, they had a great game against Golden State last week, but then you know, they went to San Antonio and lost to them, and then they lost to the worst team in the league last couple nights ago, the Houston Rockets. Yeah, they play the Wizards tonight, so we'll see what happens there. But the Lakers still suck. But I actually am wearing a Lakers tank top today, so I still rep my team, even though they suck fucking ass and are still gonna be lucky if they make the playoffs. Now, let's move on to the conference tournaments that have been going on this week. In the Big 12 conference tournament, my semifinal predictions was going to be Texas Tech versus Texas and Kansas versus Baylor. Well, guess what? I was wrong there. And then also, so that made my championship Texas versus Baylor with Baylor as the Big 12 champs. Well, I was wrong on both counts because both Texas and Baylor lost yesterday. Texas actually had a nice, solid lead up against TCU. They had an 18-point lead at halftime, and I'm like, all right, they're looking good. And then all of a sudden, they started choking, and TCU made this beautiful comeback, and Texas is back at home waiting to see what goes on with March Madness. They definitely will be making March Madness, luckily, but that was an awful showing from them yesterday. But Baylor did even worse. They lost to Oklahoma. Barf. When I was watching it, I hate both teams equally, so I really couldn't care less who was winning that game. But when I saw Oklahoma win, I'm like, oh man, see, that there's always something about when Texas loses and Oklahoma wins that just really pisses me the fuck off. So yeah, there was that. But so the actual semifinal now is TCU versus Kansas and Oklahoma versus Texas Tech. I have Kansas beating TCU, and I have Texas Tech beating Oklahoma. So the final I have is Kansas versus Texas Tech, with Kansas beating Texas Tech. I actually think either team could win. Texas Tech is a really underrated team. I don't think a lot of people are aware that Texas Tech even really exists. They are a good basketball team, but Kansas is also good. And I'm just leaning towards Kansas because of their experience. But I wouldn't be shocked if Texas Tech were able to come in and pull off that upset. Honestly, anybody but OU, in my opinion, at this point. And then moving on to the Pac-12 conference tourney, my semifinal picks were Arizona versus Oregon, UCLA versus USC, with the championship being Arizona versus UCLA, and UCLA as the Pac-12 conference champions. And the actual, I was actually pretty close, only wrong on one team. The first matchup in the semifinal is Colorado versus Arizona. So I was wrong about Colorado, but got Arizona right. And then USC versus UCLA. So, of course, I'm going to pick with my original championship picks with Arizona versus UCLA, with UCLA being the Pac-12 conference tournament champions. Then moving on to the SEC conference tournament, my semifinal pick was Auburn versus Arkansas, Tennessee versus Vanderbilt, and then the championship, Auburn versus Tennessee, with Auburn as the champion. And Auburn actually just dashed those dreams right before I started the podcast. They just actually lost to A&M. Right now, the SEC conference isn't in their semifinals yet. They're on the round before. Their semifinal begins tomorrow, and then the finals on Sunday. So today's matchups were Auburn versus Texas A&M, and Texas A&M just upset Auburn. I actually had Auburn winning that game just because that's who I had going to win the conference tournament, but they completely blew that. A&M just dominated them the second half. And then Arkansas versus LSU, Tennessee versus Mississippi State, and Kentucky versus Vanderbilt. So I already had Arkansas as my pick, so I'm going to go ahead and keep that. Tennessee also had them, and then Vanderbilt also had them. So then my semifinal would be Texas A&M versus Arkansas and Tennessee versus Vanderbilt. And so I'll go ahead and I'll actually pick Texas A&M over Arkansas and Tennessee over Vanderbilt, which would make the championship Texas A&M versus Tennessee. And I have Tennessee as the SEC conference champion. Then moving on to the Big East conference tournament, my semifinal was Providence versus Creighton and Villanova versus UConn, with a championship of Providence versus Nova, or Villanova, and actual ended up being what I said it was going to be, Providence versus Creighton and Villanova versus UConn. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with my original picks of Providence and UConn, or I'm sorry, Providence and Villanova. And Villanova, I have them winning the championship, the Big East Conference Tournament championship. And then finally, in the ACC Conference Tournament, my semifinal was Duke versus Wake Forest, Virginia Tech versus North Carolina, and then a championship of Duke versus North Carolina, with Duke as the ACC Conference champion. I was right on all but one. Duke versus Miami is the first matchup. I was wrong on Miami. And then Virginia Tech versus North Carolina. So I'm going to stick with my original picks on winners. Duke versus North Carolina. And then Duke taking home the ACC championship. All right. And this week, Greg Popovich, the great coach of the San Antonio Spurs, actually tied Don Nelson as the coach with the most wins. So he's gonna definitely break that record at some point this season. The Spurs are a trash ass team. That's why it's like, what the fuck are the Lakers doing losing to the Spurs and the Rockets, two of the worst teams in the league? But cool, way to go, guys. Suck ass. But Greg Popovich, he ended up tying Don Nelson, and so they're both tied with the most wins as a coach. By the way, that tie was against the Lakers, by the way. Can you believe that? The Lakers, that's just so fucking weird. Who would have thought? Oh, I would have thought. Yeah, I would have thought. I actually knew that was going to happen when I heard that Popovich was only a game away from tying. I was like, oh, cool. I see the Lakers are next up on their schedule. I'm sure that's where he's going to tie it up, right there against the Lakers. That's the perfect fucking opportunity. But anyways, that got me thinking about one of the great sports fans debates, are who are the greatest NBA coaches of all time. And obviously Greg Popovich is definitely one of them. And so I decided to put together my top five greatest NBA coaches of all time. And when you actually do the research on it, it's actually a very easy list, in my opinion. I already knew who my top three were right off the bat when I thought about it. And then I was like, who are going to be four and five? And then when I really thought about it, I was like, oh, yeah, four and five. I thought of them in my head. And then when I started doing research, I was like, oh, yeah, this is not even close. At least as far as this five, the top five goes, 100%. I don't think you can argue really with any of these, unless you're a hater and you have some stupid, idiotic excuses. And believe me, I will get to some of those excuses, especially on one of my coaches, because it's always a hilarious debate. But Let's go ahead and I'm going to name my top five greatest NBA coaches of all time, starting with number five, Steve Kerr. He's currently the coach of the Golden State Warriors. He's been the coach since 2014. And basically, the Warriors have done nothing but win since he's taken over the team. He took over for Mark Jackson, who completely flopped. The Warriors weren't a horrible team under Mark Jackson, but you could just tell there was something about him that the players, I don't know, couldn't connect with, or maybe the front office couldn't connect with. But basically, they fired him and hired Steve Kerr. Now, Steve Kerr, he happened to play for two of my top three coaches on my list. Greg Popovich, he played for the Spurs to end his career, but he spent the majority of his career with the Chicago Bulls under Phil Jackson. And basically, he's taken both of their coaching styles and combined them into his own. And, I mean, that just goes to show that's why he's such a good coach, because he learned from Greg Popovich and Phil Jackson, two of the greatest coaches of all time. That's really awesome to see somebody take that knowledge and turn it into this and then become one of the greats as well. That's why I knew at first I was like, should I put Steve Kerr on here? Because he hasn't been in the league that long, especially compared to the top four. But he's done so much, especially compared to everybody below him, where I'm like, you actually do have to put him in the top five, at least for now, until somebody happens to surpass him. But it's going to be very difficult. Steve Kerr is a three-time champion. He won with the Warriors in 2015, 2017, and 2018. In that time period, they actually went to five straight NBA finals. And so they lost two of them. They lost the one to the Cavaliers in Game 7, and then they lost to the Raptors in 2019. His overall record at this point is he's 420 wins, 193 losses, for a 685 winning percentage at this point. He led the Golden State Warriors to an NBA record 73-9 regular season. That was the 2015-2016 season, although that was the season they did lose to the Cavaliers. So, I mean, that kind of puts a damper on that NBA record. But still, that team absolutely dominated in the regular season. And you really can't say anything bad about Steve Kerr. He's you could tell he connects with the players very well. And he just knows how to win. And, when I was sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, do I really want to put Steve Kerr? Yeah, you got to put Steve Kerr in there. He has even more accolades than what I'm naming off, but I mean, the lists are so long. It's like, I only have so much time, obviously. But then some of his notable players that have played for him: Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. All exceptional players, and I think Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are shoo-ins for the Hall of Fame. Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, we'll see where history lies with that, but I mean, Steph Curry came in and changed the game, and Kevin Durant's been one of the best players since he hit the league. So those are just some of the notable players who have played under Steve Kerr. Then number four on my top five greatest NBA coaches of all time, Pat Riley. He coached the Los Angeles Lakers from 1981 to 1990, the New York Knicks from 1991 to 1995, and then the Miami Heat from 1995 to 2003, and then 2005 to 2008. He is one of the winningest coaches ever of all time. He's a five-time NBA champion. He's been to nine total NBA finals. He won in 1982, 1985, 1987, 1988 with the Lakers, and then in 2006 with the Miami Heat. He was the coach of Showtime Lakers. So, I mean, they were the league at the time, them and the Celtics. It was all about them. The three he lost three with the Lakers, and then he lost one with the Knicks. He got all three of the franchises to the finals. So that's just crazy. I mean, he was successful at every level, and as an NBA executive, which he currently is, he is one of the top executives. He's made great moves throughout his career, and he's a three-time champion as an NBA executive. Overall, his overall record is 1,210 wins, 694 losses, for a 636 winning percentage. He's most known for defense. Now, like I said, he coached the Showtime Lakers, who everybody remembers them offensively, but defensively is really where they where they made their bread and butter. That was what made them such a special team, is their defense. And I know a lot of people don't remember that, but that's what they were known for. And so that's kind of just what he was all about, was defense, defense, defense. And that's what won them their championships. Some of the notable players who played for him were Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Patrick Ewing, Dwayne Wade, and Shaquille O'Neal. All Hall of Famers, all amazing players. And quite frankly, I could have gone on even more. But those were just the highlights that I had for who Pat Riley has coached throughout his amazing career. Then number three on my top five greatest NBA coaches of all time, Greg Popovich. He's been with the San Antonio Spurs his entire career from 1996 till today. He's a five-time NBA champion with six total. He's been to six total. They won 1999, 2003, 2005, 2007, and 2014. They lost in 2013 to the Miami Heat. His records, I mean, since he's still in the league, his record currently is 1,335 wins, 694 losses for a 658 winning percentage. And he's just known as being just a solid, great coach. What I've always loved about Greg Popovich is he's no bullshit. And I've always loved Greg Popovich. I mean, as a Lakers fan, you're supposed to hate the Spurs. I've always respected the Spurs. I've mentioned it before in the past. Tim Duncan is one of my favorite basketball players all time. Hands down, love Tim Duncan. I also love Tony Parker, Monty Ginobili, David Robinson. But I just have always respected Greg Popovich for his style of coaching. He just sticks to what he knows. He knows how to find like nobody would really know who Tony Parker or Monty Ginobili were, I think, if it weren't for Greg Popovich. He knew their skill set and he was able to make it flourish into two Hall of Fame players, hands down. And notable players under Greg Popovich are basically just named off the majority of them. David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Monty Ginobili are just some highlights. But there were many that, and still many to this day, that Popovich has coached. Popovich probably, it's really difficult to tell how much longer he has in the NBA. Ever since Tim Duncan retired, the Spurs have actually been a pretty shitty team. They haven't even made the playoffs in the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him retire in the next, I'd say 1 to 3 years. But I mean, he's had a stellar coaching career, and, I've personally enjoyed it. And, I don't think the Spurs are going to make the playoffs this year either. So, I wouldn't be shocked to actually see him retire this year, but, we'll see where it goes with Pop. Then number two on my top five greatest NBA coaches of all time, Red Auerbach. The Boston Celtics coach from 1950 to 1966. He is a 9-time NBA champion. The Boston Celtics actually went to 10 NBA championships in a row when he was the coach. They won in 1957, and then they won from 1959 all the way through 1966. So yeah, they won 8 in a row for 9 total. Just one of the greatest. That was basically the first dynasty ever. His overall record was 938 wins, 479 losses with a 662 winning percentage. And he was just a really innovative coach. First of all, he actually drafted the first black player ever, a guy named Chuck Cooper. And he never cared what you looked like. And so he was just that guy who basically made the push for black men to make it in the NBA. So that was definitely what he was all about. Another very impressive thing that I find most impressive, and it was actually kind of difficult for me to not put him at number one for this, but I didn't put him at number one. And obviously I'll go into more depth because if you haven't figured it out, it should be pretty easy to figure out who my number one is. But it almost put R back at number one, but I had to put number one at number one because I'll tell you why in a bit. But Red Auerbach coached with no bench coaches because at the time, you know, NBA didn't really get that popular until the Showtime Lakers, basically. Before then, I mean, the NBA was a dwindling league, and you know, a lot of teams were close to folding. And there really wasn't a huge future in NBA. So now when you're watching an NBA game, you see that there's a bench with full of coaches. There's usually like, you know, 5 to 10 coaches, bench coaches. And in Red Auerbach's day, it was just the coach, the one coach. So it's very impressive that not only was he, because he was a huge innovator when it just came to the way basketball is played and the way the way it is still to this day. There's just, his DNA is all over the NBA. And the fact that he coached with no bench coaches is just insanely, it's just very impressive. And you just couldn't imagine it, especially in today's NBA. I mean, hell, even just as early as the 90s. I mean, remember when the O.J. Simpson driving in the Bronco on the highway and, you know, you got the helicopter over him and breaking news. That was during an NBA Finals game. Actually, an NBA Finals game that Pat Riley was coaching in, as a matter of fact. Yeah, he did coach in that one. Because, yeah, it was the Knicks. So at that time, I mean, NBA games weren't even shown live. I mean, you would have to watch it after the news, the live news, and then they would show the game that was already played. And so, like I said, at that time, they broke in on the NBA Finals to see O.J. Simpson driving down the highway about to be arrested. So that's just kind of how crazy, how far the NBA has come. But back in Red Auerbach's day, it was even less. And so it's very impressive that he had no bench coaches and achieved what he achieved. And just a few notable players, because if you don't know, 13 players he coached are in the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, it was difficult to really just dwindle it down to a few. But, of course, Bill Russell, one of the greatest legendary players of all time. Ed McCauley, Bill Sharman, one of his biggest draft picks was Bill Sharman. He went to bat for that dude. Not a lot of people believed in that pick at the time, but he did, and it worked out perfect. And then Casey Jones. So Red Auerbach, number two. And so my number one top five greatest NBA coach of all time is Phil Jackson. He coached the Chicago Bulls from 1989 to 1998. Coached the Los Angeles Lakers from 1999 to 2004, and then from 2005 to 2011. He's an 11-time NBA champion. He's been to 13 total, and he's the king of the three-peat when it comes to NBA championships. With the Bulls, they won in 91, 92, and 93, and then 96, 97, 98. Then with the Lakers, he won in 2000, 2001, and 2002. Then in 2009 and in 2010. And actually with those last two there, they actually lost to the Boston Celtics in 2008. That makes me want to vomit, even just saying that. And then the other loss was to the Detroit Pistons. And that was at 03, 04? Yeah, so those are the two that he's lost. His overall record is 1,155 wins, 485 losses for a 704 winning percentage. If you'll notice, that's higher, significantly higher than all the other four guys on this list that I've mentioned. He's also had a winning record every single year of his career. No other coach can say that. And some of the notable players he coached, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr, Dennis Rodman, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Pau Gasol, and the underrated Derek Fisher. And there's even more you can name off. And a lot of people don't want to put Phil Jackson as number one because they like to make the most idiotic loser argument of all time. And that is, he coached Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and shit. And they like to name off all these great players that he coached. And it's like, yeah. Well, in this top five list, I don't know if you noticed, but I named off a whole bunch of Hall of Famers that these other guys have coached. That's called a winning career. You have to have great players to actually win motherfucking games, stupid. And to actually keep all of these big ass egos in check all at the same fucking time is actually pretty goddamn difficult. And look at it. I mean, Steve Kerr played for him and is now one of the top coaches of all time. Not even just on my list. I actually, like I said, I did a lot of research on this. Steve Kerr is on a lot of people's lists. So I'm just saying, you people who like to hate on Phil Jackson because that's the cool thing to do, if you actually look at the statistics and compare him side by side, really, the only thing I could put over him with Red Auerbach was that he had no bench coaches. But other than that, Phil Jackson literally blows all of these dudes out of the water. And I just think it's because people really don't like him that they have to. It's just loser talk. That's how losers justify being a loser is, oh man, I gotta be upset and I gotta create lies. And it's like, dude, Michael Jordan wasn't shit. until Phil Jackson came around and turned that team around. Also, Michael Jordan didn't do it all by himself. I just named off a couple people. Could you imagine coaching Dennis Rodman? Dennis Rodman actually didn't work too well with Greg Popovich, as a matter of fact. So, yeah. Then can you imagine dealing with Kobe and Shaq? We all know how that shit went down. Come on. He wrote a whole fucking book about it. So, but, you know, Phil Jackson was basically the inventor of the triangle offense, something that Steve Kerr uses in his offense, just saying. And it's actually one of the most difficult offenses to master. You have to have the perfect players to master the triangle offense. And he was the master at the triangle offense. And he just had a spectacular coaching career. He actually had a good basketball career too as a player. But he just knows basketball inside and out. And, really, if you want to argue with me that Red Auerbach's better than him, I can go with that argument. But everybody else on this list, you actually can't argue with me on. But you know, like I said, the argument that, oh my God, he coached a bunch of good players. Well, like I said, with, Red Auerbach, that means you got to take him off the list. Cause, 13 of his players are in the Hall of Fame. Those are great players. So we got to take him off the list then. Cause he just had nothing but great players around him. Right. And then you got Greg Popovich, who hasn't done shit since Tim Duncan left. So you got to get rid of him because, I mean, oh my God, he hasn't done anything without any good players. And I mean, there's actual proof of that right now too. I don't think it counts against him, but I'm just using all your idiotic arguments against you. And then what about Pat Riley here? He had Showtime, you know, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Patrick Ewing. Those are some of the greatest players of all time. So that means you got to take him out of there. And then Steve Kerr, his career is too early for him to really have any Hall of Famers. But like I said, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, those sound like two shoe-ins to me. So you got to get rid of him too. So basically that leaves your list set nobody, because only successful coaches have successful players. So, you know, that's my top five list, NBA greatest coaches of all time. Like I said, I thought it was pretty fucking easy. You know, we got a stacked weekend of basketball. Stacked ass weekend. I've already been just watching college basketball like 24/7 since yesterday. March Madness has basically already begun for me. Once Monday rolls around, we will have a clear picture of March Madness, and I will have my motherfucking bracket ready for y'all, and it's gonna be all busted and shit come the following Monday. We all know that, because that's the way it works. But I'm super excited to get started with some March Madness, and, yeah, that's what to expect on Monday, is more basketball, more March Madness, and we'll see what happens this weekend, because now that baseball's back, that means there's going to be some major moves made this weekend. Any free agents who are out there still are probably going to get picked up pretty quick. And so I'm sure I'm going to have plenty of stuff to recap on Monday. But get ready for some March Madness. All right, guys, enjoy your weekend, and I will talk to you on Monday. Peace out, fools.